Haunted Night, live with Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross.
Thank W.J. Pierce for creating and performing our music. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Thorn and Cross Haunted Nights Live. We're your hosts, Alistair Cross and Tamara Thorne. Thank you for joining us. Before we introduce tonight's guest, I'm going to turn it over to Tamara, who's going to tell you a little bit about what we're working on now.
We're just wrapping up edits and our new solo novels, two novels instead of one, are going to be out this spring. And mine is called Brimstone. It's a coming-of-age story that takes place in 1968. The Brimstone Grand Hotel, owned by reclusive former movie star Delilah Devine, looms high on Hospital Hill, harboring long-buried family secrets that whisper of unimaginable horrors, horrors that will echo down through generations. Within the walls of the Brimstone Grand, the past has come back to life. And Holly Tremaine and her grandmother Delilah are faced with an ancient familial evil that rages just below the old hotel's serene facade, an evil that won't rest until it possesses Holly, body, mind, and soul. And meanwhile, Alistair's new release, The Silver Dagger, is the second book in the Vampires of Crimson Cove series, and it picks up where the first book, The Crimson Course, leaves. Crimson Cove has been good to the Coulter brothers since Gretchen Van Treese was staked and her horde of vampires scattered. But when she rises from the grave, the brothers are torn apart, their lives and the peace between them shattered. Meanwhile, a serial killer is stalking the little mountain town, leaving a trail of blood that leads to a truth Sheriff Ethan Hunter doesn't want to face. The streets are no longer safe, nor are the forested paths, for a new and unknowable evil has come to Crimson Cove, and everyone, vampire and human alike, must come together in order to survive. Alistair.
All right, and if you are into vampires and you want to check out more, you can check out Darling Girls, which is a companion novel to The Crimson Corset, and it's also a companion novel to Tamara's Candle Bay. What we did, basically, is we combined our vampire worlds, and we had a lot of fun with that. So Darling Girls is available everywhere books are sold. Again, you're listening to Thorn and Cross, Haunted Nights Live. You can learn more about what we do at our websites, alistaircross.com and tamarathorn.com. You can visit our mutual blog at thornandcross.wordpress.com, or if you tweet, our handles are at crossalistair and at tamarathorn. You can also visit our Haunted Nights Live page on Facebook. For more information on the show, you can visit Authors on the Air on Facebook, Twitter, and at authorsontheair.com. This is a broadcast of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. Tonight, we are thrilled to have a new-to-us author. Our guest tonight is Jonas Saul. He is the best-selling author of the Sarah Roberts series and has written and published over 30 thrillers. After selling more than 2 million books, he signed with Gandolfo Haling and Fountain Literary and Dramatic Rights Management. His recent releases are The Future is Written, published by pioneering media company Adaptive Studios, and The Immortal Gene, published by Vesuvian Books. Saul has traveled extensively throughout the world to scout settings for his thrillers, spending several years between Greece, Italy, Denmark, and Hungary. He is regularly invited to be a guest speaker, teacher, or workshop presenter at international writing conferences. So, without further ado, welcome to the show, Jonas. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We're so glad to have you.
We are. Now, we were talking a little bit before the show. You have a really interesting kind of backstory. Your road to publication is it's an interesting one because why don't you just tell us about your path to publishing?
Well, sure. I'll sum up a bit of that. It's a long story, so I'll do it in quick segments. I started writing when I was 10, short stories. And for 20 years, I wrote short stories just in my spare time. And I really, really found that I enjoyed writing. So by the time I was 30, I decided to write my first novel. And then at 31, another, and 32, another, and I kept writing books. So by 2002, I started reaching out to New York and literary agents and querying and going to writers' conferences by 04, meeting agents, pitching, and I spent almost a decade looking for a literary agent trying to break into the publishing world, and I couldn't. I didn't know what I was doing wrong. A lot of it was the writing. It wasn't there yet. And so I didn't know that. I was told that, but like any new author, I thought I had the best story and it was written quite well. So I kept going, perseverance. And finally in 2011, I realized that with the advent of the Kindle and self-publishing and Conrad's blog on self-publishing and several other amazing stories I was hearing out there, I decided to self-publish. That's how I started. I self-published several of my books all at once in February of 2011, and sales began to happen. And within a couple of months, I was making a living wage, and then I was making more money than I've ever made, and the books continued to sell. So from 2011 was my first sale, and by 2016, I'd sold over 2 million books. And I was in L.A. I was in Hollywood pitching studios. I had an agent down in Hollywood that had called me, and we were going around to Sony, Lionsgate, everywhere. Finally, I had a literary agent reach out to me, and I had already outranked Stephen King several times on Amazon. My book sales had gone to the stratosphere a couple times. I've got pictures to prove it. And so anyway, I was quite excited, and I was doing a lot of unique things. I found them unique. And I talk a lot about it at writers' conferences and try to inspire new writers to do something. Look, if you can't find a way, make a way. Make your own way. You're your own life manager. You know, you've got to manage your career. And if you're not happy with it, then fire yourself and rehire a new manager yourself and change the way you're doing it. You know, there's a lot of things that you've got to focus on. And so anyway, that's really my path to publication. By 2016, my agent looked at my work and called me back and said, look, I actually know who I can sell this to. Give me a couple of days. And she called me back later that night and said, looks like we have a sale. And she sold the Sarah Roberts series to Adaptive Books, Adaptive Studios. And they're now in, you know, they're in the act of preparing it for pitching CAA. Like, it's all going through Hollywood to be made into a TV series. The Immortal Gene is in that vehicle right now too. It's down in LA. So we've got lots of things happening, and I'm very happy with my agent. And now I'm considered what they call a hybrid author, because I still write several books a year and give them to my agent, and I still write a book or two a year that I self-publish.
Well,
that makes sense.
Really wise. Yeah. I think we've heard more and more that seems to be kind of the way to go. If you're going to self-publish, you kind of earn your place, and then you have something to offer them. It seems like more and more they're looking at that more than just pitches from, you know, unpublished writers.
Right. Yep, I agree.
And I can't believe how quickly you write. The Sarah Roberts series, you started in 2014, was it? 13?
No, my first 12? Sarah Roberts book was 2002.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
So it's not quite as crazy as it looks. Yeah, I'm
no.
Looking
no.
Update.
No. Although
you
I
write
do write
10 books a year.
I do write 6 books a year.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
On average,
that's
about 6.
Still doing well.
Lately,
wow.
I've been cutting it. Last couple of years, last 2 years, I've cut it back to about 4.
Nice. Are you? How long do your books average? How many? What's your word count?
90,000 pages. 90,000 words.
We've
yeah,
got
90,000
so
pages.
yeah, we go twice
no,
that if we're – well, we try not to. Yeah, we write
I'm about,
two books
I'm about 80,000 to 90,000 words.
That's
nice,
good.
Nice.
That would really
so
help.
Do
we
you
keep
do
trying
this,
to get down that low.
Yeah, we do. We're constantly cutting because we both write long, and so our editing process is really long.
Oh yeah, of course.
Do you do this like? I mean, obviously you do it full time. You're earning a living wage. How many hours a day do you put in?
It depends on the day. Depends on what I'm working on, and so I'll break it into two segments here. If I'm just writing, I work Monday to Friday. I take weekends off to ruminate, think on what I've written, think about what I'm going to be writing. Because I write, I'm a free writer. I don't ever or outline. I have no idea where the characters are going, even 20,000 words in. I think
right.
I know, but I don't know until Monday morning when I sit down and hover over the keyboard. That being said, if I'm just writing, I'll write 4 to 6 hours a day. Some days are four. Because I do 5,000 words a day, and 5 days
right.
a week, I write 25,000. Now, not all those words are good words. I write.
Right.
I built. Yeah. When I first, bear in mind,
yeah.
new writers. When I first started, I was doing 1,000 words a day or 1,500 a day, and I wanted to increase my output. So I started to go to 2,000 a day, then 2,500 a day, and I found that 3,000 a day was a challenge. So in any time you want to face a challenge and burn it, 3,000 a day was so tough, I decided to go to 10,000 a day, because there's several authors out there, like Michael Crichton, who's known for 15 to 18,000 a day. So if these guys can do it, I'm sure I can get to 10. So I spent a week doing 10,000 words a day, and I didn't stop typing until I'd done my 10. At the end of that week, I was exhausted mentally, physically, so I realized that 10's too much for me. But when I went back to 3, oh my goodness, that was so easy. Once I'd gone in excess to 10, 3 now was not a problem. So 5 wasn't even a problem. So now I do basically 4 to 5 a day. So my goal is 25 a week. That's why 75,000 in 3 weeks is my and then the fourth week I'm usually finishing my first draft. And
right,
so then
right,
I take
right.
a month or two. Well, I take a month or two to reread it, re-edit, and start working on another book. And then send it to my editor, and I'm writing the next book now. He sends it back, and I do the edits, send it out to beta readers. So really, I mean, I might start a book in January, but it won't be ready till June, July, or August. But
right.
my point is, I have an assembly line where that's why when one comes out in August, the one I started in mid-February or early March will be now ready in October. So every 3 months, I have another book that's ready, but I've been working on it for almost a year or 8 months or whatever.
Right.
Right.
So that's the assembly line kind of scenario I work on. So back to your original question, how much time? Sorry, I'm a storyteller, and I will go on tangents and tell stories.
This is great.
We like that. No, that's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
So back to the original, how many hours? Well, if I'm just doing my word count, I'll start at 9 a.m. Mm-hmm. and be done at 1 in the afternoon and go golfing. Or take the rest of the day off,
wow.
or have a nap, or read for the rest of the evening. But if I'm editing, because my editor sent back a piece, I'll work 12 hours. I'll just sit there at my desk all day, getting rid of those extra commas, or fixing, those two sentences were better as one, and getting rid of the capital, and getting rid of the period, and putting a comma there. So I'll spend all day doing that, because that's sort of monotonous, but at the same time, I don't have to think as much. I just need to accept and reject his changes. So there are days when I work 12 hours. There are days when I work 3, 4. Every day is different. And some days I don't feel good. I won't work much at all. But here's my other thing. Lastly, I'll say this. I do 25,000 words a week. So if I get to Friday and I'm only at 22, I've got to work Saturday or Sunday now. Because I cannot start, this is my discipline, I cannot start my Monday morning unless that 25 is done.
Right.
You know, the opposite
like that.
Side is, on the Wednesday, say, of the week, and I'm in a great scene, there's a great chase thing, I know what's going to happen at the end, I'm excited, I just keep writing, and suddenly it's dinner time and I've done 7,500 words that day. Well, great, that just means the Thursday and Friday I have 2,500 less to do. Those are the kinds of, you know, balances I do. Sometimes I'm done my 25,000 by Thursday at noon. And sometimes I'm at 17,000 by Friday at midnight. And I'm like, I still have 7,000 to do over the weekend. Well, and that's my consequence of being a bit lazy through the week. So, and that's how I do it.
You've managed to make something work that a lot of people cannot in the face of a world that will tell you, no, you can't, and it has nothing to do with your writing. It's just the way it works. You go into this knowing you're going to be told no over
yeah.
and over and over. And you found a way to make it work, and just listening to you, I know exactly why. You are organized,
yeah.
you're disciplined, you set goals. This is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
This is fantastic stuff.
It is.
I love hearing this. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
and you know,
so
yeah. I love what you just, thank you. Thank you very much. I love what you just said about saying, yeah, I came into this knowing I'm going to be hearing the word no. One thing I did years ago, a quick aside here, in early 90s, I was unemployed for a few months and wondering what I was going to do with my life. And I went to work for a vacuum cleaner company, believe it or not, for a few months, and I got out of it. But anyway, cold calling, knocking on doors, trying to sell Kirby's. And doors are being slammed in your face, you're being told no, and you keep going cold calling. Well, here's the thing. I would sell at least one or two vacuums a week. So I started to learn, it's a numbers game. I started to add up how many doors on average said no, how many were slammed, how many would chat with me. I started making these numbers up and look, I call it a numbers game. Started looking at all these numbers and I realized that it took about 50 doors to get into one house. Then it took about, I think the number was like 20 something houses before I made a sale. So then I thought,
wow.
Oh, okay. So to increase sales, to start making more money, I need to get to those 50 doors faster. So I would run up to
right.
the door, knock, and the door would slam. Yes, one down. And I'd race to the next. Yes, another one down. I am so much closer to the sale. When I
right.
got into publishing, when I started getting mm-hmm. rejection letters, I wrote a huge essay on, and it's called Rejection Letters Are Great. And I do a panel on this because they're so exciting. Because when you get one, yes, you're so much closer to the acceptance letter. Keep going. This is great.
Right.
And I get really excited.
Yeah.
A lot of people get a no, and they're, oh, and they get despondent. Maybe I'm not good enough. You see, you have to understand, doubts are your traitors. Doubts
yep.
will make you lose what you oft might win. So kill all doubt. You're good. You're going to keep writing, and you're going to make it. You just got to keep going.
Yeah. Now, I would
Very
like to ask
well
you a question. Alistair and I do not believe in writer's block. We just work through. We just write anything. How do you handle it when you are getting stuck? We have each other to talk to get through.
Such
How
a,
do you do it?
Such a fabulous topic because I am so on board with you. I do not believe in writer's block. I have never had it, and I have actually never been stuck. So the question is, how do I work through when I'm stuck? I don't know. I've never been stuck. I don't get stuck. But you know
but
why
you
I don't get stuck
out.
And why there's
mm-hmm.
no writer's block? Because I write mm-hmm. in my voice. I write
yeah.
in my voice.
Okay.
If
well,
you're right, if you're not writing mm-hmm. in your voice, you can get stuck. In other words, if you said, write a dystopian romance, I have no idea how to do that. I don't know anything about that. I would have to
oh.
go and research it, look into it, and try and write it. I'd get 10,000 words in and be stuck.
Oh,
but
absolutely.
If you said, write
right.
me a,
I mean
write
something
me a,
like, you know,
okay.
say you're in a locked
okay.
room mystery, and you have to figure out how the murder happened, and you know, it can take hours to figure it out. That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about.
Oh.
How do you get through? Yeah, that kind.
Okay, that kind of stuck? Okay, that has happened
mm-hmm.
a couple of times to me where I call that writing myself into a corner.
Yeah. So do we.
Okay,
yeah.
But bear in mind, every single novel, on purpose, I write myself into a corner. Because if I don't know how to get out, at that point in the book, the reader will have no idea how the author is going to pull it off. And that keeps them reading. So
mm-hmm.
I have been stuck so many times, it's unbearable. There have been
right.
times when I've been stuck for 2 and 3 days. But when you say stuck, that's what I mean. Not writer's block, but stuck. Yes,
no.
I agree.
It's
I've been stuck.
That, yeah.
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 Logic
I just get out.
Yeah.
I don't know how. I just get out. I find a way because I don't have any other options. I have never had to go back to the manuscript and rewrite to unstuck myself. I've never done
that. Oh,
that
would be
horrible. I always find
yeah.
a way to continue forward.
Yeah.
Right. No. Yeah. And I love that because yes, you are gonna write yourself into a corner. But yeah, we totally like the whole writer's block thing. Like, oh, I sit in front of the computer and I don't know what to write. I don't understand
that. It's self-indulgent. Yeah.
I think it kind of is.
Yeah. It's an excuse.
Yeah. Exactly.
But it can be tricky figuring out your logic sometimes, and that. And well, Alistair, we're not that bad. We'll spend a few hours and think we get crazy because, oh, we've been doing this for 3 hours and we still haven't figured it out. And then all of a sudden it breaks. But,
right.
You know, open.
Right. Right. I have a rules of writing. Like Kurt Vonnegut has the rules of writing. All these different, mm-hmm. Elmore Leonard has his rules of writing. Neil Gaiman. I've written mine. And I'm not trying to be self-indulgent here, but I have written mine. And these are the 10 rules. I'm not going to give them all to you right now. They're too long. But in these 10 rules of writing I live by has caused me to have the career I have because of these rules I live by. One of the rules, though, is write for goosebumps and tears. And what I mean by that is when I get goosebumps as I'm typing or I start to cry while I'm typing, I know that's where my reader is going to feel goosebumps or cry. And so I say that because when I get stuck into a corner – when I write myself into a corner, I know that's when the reader's going to gasp and say, oh, my, what are we going to do now? So I often will do that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we would I'm going to prematurely invite you back to talk about.
Yes. No, it's not premature. I was going to say the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah, we have
we're
a
doing
lot,
some
you have
theme
a lot,
shows.
Yeah, you have a lot to offer, and so I hope that you'll come back. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
I also noticed,
give us your rules.
One of the things, it'll be great. I also noticed that one of the things you said is, and we do this too. This is another thing that we kind of have in common. We don't really outline either. We have our characters, and we both write together. We write collaborative novels, and we also both have solo projects going at all times, so it's this constant system. But but we're very similar. We work the same way, so I'm speaking for both of us when I say we, whether it's a collaboration or a solo novel, we do the same thing. We don't outline. We create the characters. We have a vague idea of what kind of story we want to write. We've found that if we have a few possible endings, just something to kind of work towards, we do much better than going.
We call it a roadmap, just in case. Yeah. So we don't fall off the edge of the world, rarely use the endings we thought of. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you have, when you sit down to write a novel, do you have any idea whatsoever where you're going to go? Or do you truly just go blind?
I would say I have an iota. I mean, I do have an idea of the theme. For instance, if I'm going to start a Sarah Roberts novel, I know that each one has a certain, let's call it a villain. Book 15 is called The Cartel. So that one I knew she would be in Mexico and there would be a cartel and there was a problem with the drugs and the human trafficking and whatever else. And because in book 14, the book before, she had closed down in Amsterdam and in Greece, she had closed down certain human trafficking places and so on. Long story short, she was in Greece and at the end of book 14, something happens to her boyfriend and she finds out that a cartel has kidnapped him to get her attention. And the book ends. And that's why, as a series, now you pick up book 15 and you go into the cartel, and she's heading to Mexico to get her boyfriend and find out what the heck they want. And it gets really bad. And at the end of that book, leads into the next one. And that's the kind of thing I did with this series. But the point is, I knew midway through book 14 that I'm going to be pissing off a lot of people. With what Sarah's doing in this cartel, in this human trafficking thing. So who would be upset with her? And, oh, I know, a cartel would be really upset because their financial stream is going to be cut here on this on this cocaine and on this and whatever. So, let's make book 15 about a cartel. So when I sat down to start book 15, all I knew was that the boyfriend had been kidnapped and Sarah was on a plane at the end of book 14, and it was going to be a cartel thing. So I started typing when, almost when she lands and she's in Tijuana. And I just start typing. So I just know it's a cartel. It wasn't until, I think, chapter 3 when I realized the name of the cartel, when I started to realize who was in charge, why they were. I don't really get a lot of that until I start typing.
Right.
Sarah is an automatic writer. It's a version of clairvoyance. And I often feel like I'm an automatic writer, as if someone somewhere else is just typing through me, because I literally have no idea sometimes. There are days when I sit down at 9 a.m. to type and I do not know where I'm going. And often it's till 10 a.m. I'm still sitting there and let's make a coffee and I'll come back to it. But then I start to type. And before I know it, the day has ended and I've done my 7,000 or 6,000 words. And I'm so excited because, I cannot believe where the story's going. Oh, this is insane. Mm-hmm. And I'm so excited.
Right.
And I had no idea that
moment. Yeah. That's such a good feeling.
It is. This is it's fantastic. So you, I want to apologize first off. I'm not familiar with your work. We happened upon you in a kind of strange circumstances. I'm pleased to meet you, but I haven't read your work. you do series as well as standalones?
Yes, absolutely. I've got 20 books in the Sarah Roberts series, with book 21 coming out next year. The Immortal Gene is book one of a trilogy. Book two, The Target, comes out later this year or maybe next year. I've got four or five other standalones, completely standalones, with a few more coming. Another one coming out booked for September release with my publisher. So there's so many books, and there's one book, short stories. I forget how many are in it now. 15, 20 short stories are in it. I have so many things that I've written that sometimes I lose track of where they all are and what they're doing, but I'm just writing a lot. It's not always a series, though. It's not always a series. I do, in fact, in the next couple of years, I'm going to do more standalones. I have five novels on my shelf to write, all in my head. I've written a couple of notes on so I don't forget where I'm going with it, but I'm really excited about another book I'm writing called The Drowning, and it's a standalone completely.
Nice.
It's very exciting.
Do you have in terms of just I don't know. I've heard a lot in terms of sales series doing so much better. Do you find that to be true?
Absolutely. Yep.
Series
are so much better. Although once you get a base, even a standalone will sell very well. But if you just do one, two, three, book four, and then you're on your fifth standalone versus the other author who's doing book five of a series, the series author will always sell better.
Right. Well, Jonas, it has been awesome meeting you and having you on, and I do hope that you will seriously come back. We would love to have you. You have a lot to offer. You're great to talk to.
Thank you.
We can get in touch with you and do it again.
Of course. Reach out anytime. I would love that.
All right.
Great.
We will, for real. Before we let you go, could you tell our listeners where they can learn more about you and your work?
Sure. They could find me at jonassaul.com. Almost everything is there, from appearances, where I will be around the world, book covers, where they can find books. Jonassaul.com. There's lots of fan photos from around the world holding the books in bookstores. It's really exciting to go through that website and enjoy some of the fun things there. Other than that, Jonas Saul books are sold almost anywhere you buy books. I mean, Barnes & Noble in Canada, Indigo and Chapters, they're everywhere. Amazon, every single book I've got is on Amazon. Barnes & Noble, they're all over.
Oh,
all right.
Terrific.
All right. Well, thank you for being on, and we look forward to having you back. We will be in touch for sure.
Thank you very much.
Will.
I look forward to it. It'd be great. It's an honor.
Right.
Thank you so much.
Oh, great.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. Great to meet you. And to everyone out there listening, thank you for joining us. This is Thorn and Cross Haunted Nights Live, and until next week, we wish you haunted nights
and sweet screams.
Thank you for listening.
Haunted Nights, live with Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross.